Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, 906 here on WBEN. I'm B-Maz and Beamer. I might change the name of the show again. I'm going to change it. B-Maz and Beamer and The Rock. Because it's like equally as true, right? I mean, I might as well. B-Maz and Beamer and John Travolta here on WBEN. But both of them are off today. It's only me, right? I can say that. No, you'll hear from Joe later on this afternoon. He's in for Bowerly. Again, it is Brian Mazurowski here with you until about 10 o'clock this morning. I thank you for being with me. Thank you for listening yesterday. The show yesterday, the calls, the comments was much appreciated. I, you know, do want to clarify again. I feel like I need to do this all the time. And this is more, maybe it's less about me. It's more about the state of media. The one thing I don't want, right, is everybody to be confused about something I said yesterday or say today. Because, you know, all across the media landscape, whether it's something you read online, see on a show on TV, I feel like everyone is presenting their opinions as the answer. You know, everyone's got that firm foot down. This is the only way. I just want to say again that that's not what you're going to get from me. I'm not saying anything that, I'm going to stand here and say, look, this is the only way. If you don't think this, you're wrong. Or, this is the cause of that, especially when it comes to these topics that we've been talking about over the last week and a half. I think that's irresponsible. A lot of times, I think it's picking sides. So I just want to clarify again, yesterday's show, I'm not saying that paying attention to your kids at the playground is the answer to, stopping this from happening. All I'm trying to say is, maybe that's a step in the right direction. Maybe there are things that we can do by looking internally at ourselves instead of always pointing at, the government to solve our problems. That's kind of my way of looking at things. What can I do immediately before I start to look to someone in some government office to address the problem? Which, eventually, that's not to say you don't get there. It's not to say you don't ask. And you don't eventually look for the people you elect to help out your society. But I think that's my approach. That's what a lot of yesterday was about, looking inward. What can I do first and foremost to have a little bit of impact on this American crisis? Maybe that's a step in the right direction. What happens in the home, paying attention to kids to prevent that problem, isolation, social alienation, that anger toward those around you, a lack of positive emotional outlets, all these things that are causing this. 803-0930 is the number to join me again today, 803-0930. And, I think, and I was encouraged yesterday, I think this is a place where you can kind of have a respectful, measured is the word that I like, conversation about this, where we're not diving into the finger pointing. And if that sounds like you, 803-0930 is the place to join me I'd encourage you to do so today. But all those things, you know, that I mentioned and we talked a lot about yesterday, isolation, social alienation, anger, lack of an outlet, a positive outlet to let go of some of these emotions. I think these all play a part in the problem that we've been talking about. And I, you know, there's, I'm not alone in saying that by far. New York Post today, an opinion piece, Maureen Callahan writing, "Our greatest public health crisis is the angry young American male." And we talked about that today with some of our guests. Steve McMartin in studio, Aaron Katursky, certainly, who's been following this story and the story of just about all of these shootings. It's the profile. It's a young man who's troubled, isolated, who, when people look back, they don't say, "I'm shocked." John Cohen yesterday, and we heard him again earlier this morning, saying, right, it's not necessarily the ideology, it's the methodology, or something to that effect. You know, the Buffalo shooter was a racist. That was a hate crime. But does anyone truly believe that if it wasn't racism, it wouldn't have been something else? That, you know, that was the ideology that he fell into. But it could have easily been something else that he fell into, that he found online, that drove him to do this. And, you know, that, I think, is part of the root of the problem that we have here. But, you know, I appreciate the response, measured, interested in an answer, not playing the soap opera, is how I described it yesterday. And, you know, I was thinking about it more after we went off the air yesterday, is how difficult it can be, you know, putting myself in the shoes of parents of people who are in these households, how difficult it can be to say something. Another thing we talked about earlier this morning, that it's easy for us after the fact to say, well, how come you didn't say something? How come you didn't notice what's going on in your house? I was thinking about this yesterday after we got off the air, that it's kind of like a long-term pattern in parenting that is easily kind of slipped into, right? For a long time, I think what's happened in a lot of households is there's kind of this idea that, and it's not an idea that you know, are actively thinking, but I think it's just kind of in your head, right? That if one of your kids is spending all their time inside, you know, they're on the computer, they're on their phone, whatever it is, well, you know, that's good maybe, because then they're not out getting into trouble or putting themselves in danger. And, you know, maybe you don't like it. He's up in his room, he's playing video games all the time, or he's doing something like that. But, you know, to the parent, well, I don't have to worry about it, because what would really be worrying is if he's out there at 16, 17 years old, driving all around town and, you know, doing who knows what. You know, that's what traditionally you're kind of scared of. I think it's really easy to fall into that and think, right, you're safe inside the home. But then, you know, things change. The information superhighway, right? And that's only like 20 years old. So, you know, this isn't like a finger pointing at parenting or anything like that. I think it's very hard to keep up the things that you're used to thinking. It's hard to keep up with the advent of technology. 803-0930 to join me. Shelby is in Buffalo. Shelby, you're on WBEN. How are you this morning?
Hi, very good, thank you.
What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to jump in on, I was very happy to hear some positive comments being made this morning. Obviously, these young murderers are doing terrible damage. They've done terrible damage to our Black communities. and also to our white communities and broken all of our hearts. But why are they at the age of 18 being able to be swayed by the media this much? Do they not have a sense of value? So it's very hard for parents to give kids a sense of value at 18. You know, we've done just about all we can do for them when they get to be that age. But I do think that the school districts could do more in a certain way. We should not only be pointing kids towards being Harvard grads, going to Yale, and going to Cornell, or getting, or even going to a four-year college, and not having a sense of value if they can't even graduate as a senior. When they get to be a senior, they need to feel valued by society, even if they're not going to go to college. We need to make sure that these kids all are in some kind of a field that society values them. They feel like, okay, I'm going to be a welder, and I'm good at it, and I'm going to make good money at it, and I'm going to get a pension or a 401k or whatever. So I do think it might be good for the schools to try to change. We need to love these kids, all of them, and make them feel valued.
Yeah, Shelby, I
wanted to get on that in on that with you.
I appreciate the call. I appreciate the comment. Thank you for listening. I think it's a good point. You know, that's something we've talked about in a different context, I think, a lot before, right? You know, college isn't for everybody, and maybe missing from that conversation is what happens to those kids who, you know, realize that it might not be for me, and then they're trying to find something else, and it's a little bit harder to find something else, to find a sense of purpose in the world. I think part of that, too, is you mentioned schools. I think part of that is surrounding yourself with good people. It's great to have great friends, too, and friends who are supportive of no matter what it is. I mean, you know, I think back to around when I was that age, I knew people who were going to big colleges, people who dropped out in senior year, friends with all of them. And I always try to have that reaction of, you know, whatever you're trying to do, whatever you're trying to get into, you know, that's great. That's awesome. You know, it sounds great. You know, what are you doing? You know, take an interest and not writing people off. I think that, yeah, that does have a little bit of something to do with it. You know, a sense of purpose, something else to get into. Video games is something that keeps getting mentioned. And I do want to, you know, before we get back to the phones, I do want to comment on this. Is another thing I was thinking about last night, and it kept coming up on our text board this morning. You know, violent video games, something like that. And I think maybe too much attention when you talk about video games is on the violent aspect of it. And I can see why that is. I personally don't really think when you're talking about video games as an issue, I don't think the issue is any worse whether it's the most violent game in the world or whether it's, you know, tennis on a video game. I think the point of these games is, you know, when I was a teenager, a lot of you listening out there, when you might have played video games, when you played games with other people, you played games with a friend, what did you do? You had to go over to the friend's house, right? You were still together, even though your eyes might have been glued to the screen. You were still together playing games. It was still kind of a social thing. And now that's not the case. Now playing video games with people, it's all on. You know, you could talk to nobody and be playing with everybody. You know, when you talk about the video game point. You know, it's again one of these things where, all right, I'll listen to your point on video games. I think the direction that you're taking this is a little, I don't know, you know, maybe less attention on the violence aspect. Even though I'm not saying that doesn't matter. More attention on the isolation aspect of this. It's just a thought as you know, so many people are chiming in and weighing in and wanting to say video games. I'm assuming it's because that's what you're seeing in your household. Sarah in Buffalo, you're on WBEN. Sarah, what's going through your mind this morning?
Hi. So I'm a clinical psychologist, and I've had 25 years of experience working with all kinds of children and young adults, boys and girls. And I just wanted to say it's completely obvious. The Buffalo shooting was definitely racial hatred, 100%. But as I think about the Sandy Hook Newtown shooting, and I have been thinking about this for many, many, many years, why that happened. Innocent little children were killed. And as I think about this Uvalde shooting, I start to think about and put together all the pieces. What do these juvenile delinquents and antisocial shooters, what do they have in common? Many of them were neglected, abused as kids. This man, 18-year-old in Uvalde, happened to be raised, or basically not raised very well or much at all, by a grandma who probably could not supervise him. She probably could not take care of him. He was described as a loner that had problems since he was a child, a speech impediment for which he was bullied for. And most likely he became stunted in his development as that bullied child. And bullied young boys dream of taking revenge. He has always, always probably dreamed of hurting people, and that is why he's been able to very, very tragically vilify young children and was never taught to respect children because they were children, innocent children, and learn how to get along with people. He was stunted in this bullying phase of his life. I see this all the time as I perform therapy with young adults that are in their teens and 20s, and they always harken back to those years in middle school that they were bullied. And quote upon quote, no one helped me. My mom didn't care. My grandma didn't care. I hated those kids. I hear this all the time. This is no justification to what a boy like this did. No justification at all. It was horrific. But I do not believe that anyone knew what his life was probably like.
Right.
As a young person being grown up by, raised by a grandma who probably did not have the capacity to attend to his disturbed psychological needs.
Sarah, I hate to interrupt you, sorry, but just what, in your experience, okay, you've worked in this field, being able to point somebody toward a positive emotional outlet toward that. I think, you know, I'll use myself as an example. You know, as a teenager, I love going to, you know, hardcore punk rock shows. And you know what everyone looks at and sees? They see a lot of angry young kids, a lot of kids who, you know, if you weren't really familiar, you might say, you know, wow, that's an angry young person. That's, you know, somebody maybe you should be concerned about. But nobody in those scenes was really doing anything because that was the outlet. It was heavy music. It was getting together. It was, you know, you kind of found your own little community there. Finding that outlet, being able to point somebody toward that, how important is that everywhere?
What I know. So what I do is I immediately try to locate a parent, an aunt, a supervisor, a teacher, a social worker, someone who can help that child cope with the bullying and basically get help in the school to speak up. That sometimes is an intervention that helps young boys that are extremely angry about, you know, what's happening in their life. And I also try to basically figure out a way to get them to therapy. Because most of these kids don't get any therapy. They're described as loners and they're left as loners, and no one helps them. The ability to get to therapy is only in some of the best of the families. Most people do not have the capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And he can, you know, maybe if he got help as a really young child, he wouldn't have gone down that really antisocial path. I'm sure he had something called antisocial personality disorder. I'm sure he had oppositional defiant disorder and a whole multitude of disorders that cause someone to snap like that and to absolutely hate children the way he probably did.
Sarah, thank you for the call. Sorry we're short on time, but I think you had some great insight there. Listen, again, I want to make clear, like I did at the top of the show, we're not trying to sit here and say that we have the answer, you know, that any one of these things is going to prevent this from happening in the past or happening again. I think we're trying to do is talk through this all together, find some things that will help and find some things that might be able to help you in your personal life. You're listening to Brian Mazurowski. I'll be back on WBEN. Welcome back. Brian Mazurowski here with you until about 10 o'clock. Thanks for joining me, being with me. Kind of trying to talk through what's happened over the last week and a half. Thank you for your messages, your calls, 803-0930 to take part. You know, I want to be clear. A comment came in on the text board about the last caller making excuses. Nobody is making excuses for anybody. Certainly nobody is going to be making an excuse. I would be stunned for these shooters. Absolutely not. But if you want to try to address the problem, you kind of have to understand what the problem is if we're going to try to achieve some sort of solution. So there is a big difference between understanding and excuses. 803-0930 to join me. Sue in Lancaster, you're on WBEN. What's on your mind, Sue?
Hi, Brian. A lot is on my mind, but I'm going to take the parent angle because I'm a parent of four grown children, and I'm going to say parenting is hard. If it's not hard, you're not doing it right, because it is in the trenches 24/7. When you mentioned the video games, you really struck a chord with me, because when my son had a friend over to play, he was there for about a half an hour, and then he went home. And I said, what happened? Thinking something happened. No, he went home so they could play a video game together. It was a single-player game that this boy had to go home to play with him. That's, you know, the start of why are we separating these kids? When my boys would have friends over to play, I said, all right, 2 hours outside equals 2 hours inside of video games. It's not come over and play 4 hours of video games. You need to balance it. And I just really think that, listening to your last caller, I agree. You need to have your finger on the pulse of what is going on your kids' lives. You need to keep that line of communication open so that you notice if there's a behavior change, that's a red flag, you jump on it. It would be so easy just to let them go in their room, play their video games, and you think, like you said, your kids are safe. No, the TV and the video games is like inviting a stranger into your home. Would you let somebody you don't know just come in and sit in the family room with your kid? Absolutely not.
And Sue, it's hard to think of it like that, because that's a new thing. I mean, the game used to be exactly that, right? It was a game. Now the game is anyone in the world talking to your kid in your home. And that's new, and it's hard to kind of keep your finger on it. So you remind me what you're saying. You remind me of I don't know if you've ever seen The Sandlot. You remind me of the mom in The Sandlot, right? The kids sitting around playing. It wasn't video games back when that movie was set. It was like a Kinects or an Erector set.
And, you know, she kicks him out of the house and says, go get into trouble. You know, what mom are you going to hear say that? And it's almost like the same dilemma, different times.
Yep. But it's, you know, you're not comfortable. I'm not throwing parents under the bus, you know, and you certainly won't say, but as a parent, I am saying, boots on the ground, you got to be in it. My kid was bullied. It was daily conversation. And it was hard, but parenting is hard, you know?
Hey, Sue, appreciate the call. And again, look, these aren't solutions. These are, you know, trying to piece together part of the problem. And you could say something as simple as pay attention. It's not always that easy. How would you let your kid, you know, just sit there in front of the screen for, you know, 5 hours a night? Like, well, I mean, I thought he was safe at home. I didn't want him running around the city doing who knows what at midnight. And I could be understanding of parents who are on both sides of that conversation. It's tough. Julian is in North Tonawanda. You're on WBEN. Julian, what's on your mind this morning? What are you thinking about all this?
I have all I can do to contain myself. I worked in a school for 40 years. I was transferred to a couple of schools, and I can tell you exactly what they're doing wrong. I'd love to talk to these people that are trying to lock up doors, do this, do that. It isn't going to do it. They have to get to the people that work the buildings. I know every hiding place in the school in Tonawanda. One woman says, how could somebody be in the school for 6 hours and nobody know? When you got 5 rooms to a boiler room that are wide open to the outside, what they need to do is put a security system in like we have in our homes. And they have to have cameras in there. Yeah, I know it's going to take money. And I can hardly talk. I feel so sorry for these people. And if the cameras do not belong in the groundskeeper's office, where he can keep track of the cleaners, they need to be kept where they can keep track of people coming in and out of the building. If you had a security system wired to every window, every door, and you had cameras up there, then you'd have a security school system. Our schools are not air-conditioned. They have the windows open. Every window in every classroom is open. I went in classrooms 10 o'clock at night to clean. The windows wide open. Go in a locker room. The door that went out onto the field, dark as pitch in there, wide open. I went and got somebody to come in to help me check out the locker room before I went in. This is what's going on. And the kids, they can go out the door. They can lock all the doors they want in the school. Kids go out. They take a little piece of paper. They block that door so the little latch won't latch. Anybody can come in. If they had a room, like I have my panel here, the minute I look at that panel, if that light isn't green, I know there's a door ajar someplace.
Joe, I appreciate the call. I think the one thing that is I'm thinking about when I'm listening to you is it's something I was talking about with Steve McMartin off the air when he was in studio here is, you know, it's a point I brought up yesterday. You look at the distance between Buffalo and Uvalde. It's greater than the distance between London and Kiev. And we can't just assume that everything looks the same, right? I mean, I go into some of these schools it's like locked down. You feel like walking into some sort of prison, right? But then you can't assume that that's what school is like. A school with lax security exists. A school with no security exists. And in between here and the state of Texas, how many different examples of what that looks like are you going to find? And is it reasonable to think that when we talk about school security, I mean, that's something that it's done on a local level. It's unreasonable to have the conversation on, you know, this national level of school security and what's done here and how it's done over there. It's, you're never going to get everything to look the same because this country is so big. And there's so many schools in between. And, you know, you're talking about the safety aspect of this. And that the soap opera is playing out. You're seeing it in Washington. You're seeing it, you know, yesterday when the governor of Texas was speaking. It's the normal points before anybody knew anything. You saw the same familiar faces jump online to, I mean, predictably say exactly what they're going to say. I did find one, you know, Senator Mike Rounds, he's a Republican from South Dakota. He said this in response to a push for new gun control laws. He said, quote, "It's one thing to say that regardless of facts, you should just do something. The question is whether something you would do would actually make a difference." And, you know, I don't know Mike Rounds, have to be honest with you. Don't know his motivations behind the statement. I don't follow South Dakota politics very well. So I can't tell you what his intentions are, but taken on face value, I mean, that seems to be true. When we're looking at school security, when we're looking at changes to gun laws or something like that, what is actually going to make a difference? Because if you fight for some change and you get that one thing, but it doesn't make a difference in the end, what good is it? One of the things I keep hearing is this idea of expanded background checks, you know, to make, say, what we have here in New York State, the law federally. And that's pretty popular. But it also has practical limitations. And there's not too much evidence that they make a big difference, even if it is a good idea. There was a study done in California. They had an expansion of background checks in 1991. They looked back in 2019 and found that it wasn't associated with any sort of change in gun deaths over the ensuing 10 years. You have both of these recent shooters pass background checks. And that's not to say that a background check isn't a good idea, because I think it is. But what troubles me about the conversation around it is you get the feeling people are pushing for this. You know, they call it common sense gun reform, and on many levels, they're right. But then say that it gets passed at a federal level, maybe it gets passed in more states. They do that, and then we did it. We're done here. See ya. So it doesn't mean it's not a good idea, but to expect it to change the problem just like that, I don't know if that's the right expectation to be putting on this. You know, somebody on our text board earlier this morning was talking about the background check idea, and they suggested getting rid of HIPAA laws so that background checks would work better, so more things would pop up. I found that, you know, amazing that somebody would suggest. I mean, would you rather give up your right to medical privacy really, instead of limiting access to certain weapons? And that seems kind of crazy to me. I think that would be crazy to think for most people. We have here Governor Kathy Hochul said she wants New York to raise the age to buy an AR-15 rifle to 21 years old. It's up from what it is right now, 18. The 18-year-old shooter the other day used an AR-15 rifle that he bought from a store legally. That was also true of the 18-year-old here in Buffalo. It's also typically true of mass shooters in general. The list is long of people who have used that weapon. And most school shootings between 1970 and at least 2020 were done by 16 and 17-year-olds. So that to me seems like it would be a common sense. And then you hear this idea, well, you send war to people at 18. You're going to tell them you can't buy a gun here? And, you know, I kind of think, well, yeah, maybe. You can't own a lot of things that you would use in a war. Where does that argument stop? Grenades? Machine guns? And that's one with a lot of holes in it. So maybe that's the difference. Steve McMartin was our in-studio guest this morning, and he said, well, what's the difference between an 18-year-old and a 21-year-old? If I'm looking at the numbers, apparently a lot. Because when it comes to schools, the numbers fall off a cliff after the age of 18 as to who is doing this. So maybe that's one way. But going back to Mike Rounds from South Dakota, I think before people get behind one thing in particular, you do have to ask that question, whether something you would do actually will make a difference. Go to Brenda in Buffalo. You're on WBEN. Brenda, how are you this morning?
I'm very well. We had my cousin's funeral yesterday, and each day is getting better. And I still, like I said, I want to thank everybody for their condolences and their love.
Brenda, I have to ask the outpouring of support. I mean, all the people who were there for your cousin, does that warm you at all? You know, it's still so raw, I would imagine, but to see how many people wanted to show up and either support you or just say thank you?
It warmed my heart very immensely. It even with the president's visit, I've seen some negative things, politically things that were said. However, I looked at his visit as a welcome and a caring and a compassionate visit. That's the way I look at it. And anyone that showed it, and even just the outpouring of people just being there we just all just appreciate it. And I'm sure, you know, even the other families did. I even met Jennifer Warrington, who was one of the victims shot. And I embraced her, and we talked, and we cried. And it was very uplifting. Everything is very warming to me. I finally got a chance to even go on Jefferson. I hadn't been up there went up there, and I just kind of, just for a minute, just thought and looked. But I'm just going through it, coping, you know. There's nothing more it can say, but I just thank everybody. I thank, on behalf of the Salter family, I thank everyone that poured their love and showed compassion, even those that maybe not physically did it, but thought, or even just thought about us, or sent a prayer up.
I'm happy that so many people showed up. When you hear the conversation, the people looking for answers, looking for a solution, what do you think?
I don't know. I have no idea. I worked in the school system, and I don't know if we're ever going to solve this this problem of the guns or different things, because to be honest, my brother, who was 19, was killed was shot. However, the gun that shot him was not a stranger. It was a loved one. So I have never really advocated guns unless there is a very severe, to make sure that even gun owners go through maybe some step of getting clarity there that they should still have those within their person.
Brenda, appreciate the call, and hope you're doing well. Thank you. That's Brenda in Buffalo, cousin of Aaron Salter. We heard a few of the words from his service yesterday. We'll be continuing here on WBEN with David Bellavia next. Joe Beamer, you'll hear him a little bit later on, but thanks for being with me Brian Mazeroski. I'll be back here tomorrow, same time, same place, even starting way earlier if you want to get up at 5 with me. Appreciate it. Here on WBEN.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.